On this episode of the Ordinary Faith Podcast, I talk with Ashley Leonard about a hopeful home. Well, hey friends, welcome to another episode of the Ordinary Faith Podcast, where we learn together what it means to pursue a life of ordinary faith in extraordinary grace. My name is Dan Jackson. I'm grateful to be able to host this space and the conversations that we have here, and I'm really, really glad that you're here with me. Before we dive into today's conversation, I want to let you know about the Everyday Bible Podcast. I've mentioned it on here a few times, and last week I mentioned that we were having some technical difficulties over there, which hopefully are now resolved. So for those of you who have been listeners and subscribers over there, thanks for your patience. And I just wanted to let you know, if you're not yet subscribed to that Everyday Bible Podcast, this is a great time to jump in. If you're looking for something to bolster your faith and to have a little scripture reading and a brief devotion in 5 to 10 minutes every single morning, it's a great way to stay in scripture on your commute to work or while you're doing laundry or something like that. And the reason this is a great time is because we are now entering the season of Lent. And so if you're looking for a way to stay in scripture, to stay close to the heart of God and spend a little bit more intentional time during this Lent season leading up to Easter, man, what better way than just getting some scripture into your head and into your heart? So I'd encourage you to jump over and subscribe to that Everyday Bible Podcast as we head into this Lent season. Well, my guest today here on the Ordinary Faith Podcast is Ashley Leonard. Ashley works for the state of Kentucky and does investigative work there internally, and she's also a wife and a mother and a foster mother. Ashley's had a calling since a really young age to serve other people and to love and care for kids in need, and so she has walked that out in different ways and been obedient to that calling throughout her life pretty much. And so it's really encouraging to hear from her about how she has done that, how she's followed through and just taken that calling and that burden on her heart and changed so many lives as a result. So she and her husband now foster children in their home, and they've been doing that pretty much since the day they got married. And so I know that you're just going to be encouraged to hear her heart and her passion and how she and her husband are just really in it completely to serve and love kids and to serve other families in their community. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Ashley Leonard. I am glad to be joined here by Ashley Leonard. Ashley works full-time for the state of Kentucky doing investigative work. She's a wife and a mom, and in addition to being a foster mom as well as a biological mom, she also runs a fashion boutique online that raises awareness and raises funds to support foster families and foster organizations in the state of Kentucky and even around the world. So Ashley, welcome. So glad that you're here.
Thank you.
Why don't you go ahead and, if you would, just introduce yourself to us. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your family and just kind of the brief overview of who you are.
Okay, yeah. My name is Ashley Leonard. I am originally from Danville, Illinois, actually. I moved here to attend college many years ago and attended Eastern Kentucky University. Met my husband, long story short, ended up staying here in Kentucky. We resided in Georgetown. I'm a mother, like you said. I work full-time for the Office of Inspector General, investigate for them. And then we also have 4 children. We have 2 biological, a 5-month-old, a 2-year-old, and then a 9 and 10-year-old foster child. And then I also run my own business, and that is a online boutique, which is just like any other women's clothing and accessory boutique. The way that we are unique, I guess, is that we donate a portion of all of our profits back to foster care related charities.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, yeah, so tell us a little bit about that, because, you know, you've got 4 kids, 2 of them in foster care, 2 of your own. At what point did you decide to do foster care? And kind of talk us through that process about how you and your husband went about feeling that need and that burden to take on foster care, and what that process was like for you.
Okay. I would say, so everyone asks me what my why is. Yeah. What is my why for fostering? What is my why for hopeful home? I would say that my why began many years ago at the age of 13. I began babysitting for 7 adopted children. They actually lived right next door to my parents growing up, and Linda and John Waldron were the parents and who I babysat for. And I just remember always thinking how awesome Linda was. Like, wow, she's taking in all these kids. Like, they have, I don't know what they're, I was so young that I didn't realize what their past entailed.
Yeah.
But I knew the situations were bad, right? And being an adult now, I've realized that Linda was shielding me from a lot of those horrific things. But she was really my role model and my why as far as what has led me into foster care. So when I, this is many years later, but when I met my husband, foster care is always something that's always been on my heart, something I knew I was always going to do. So when we got engaged, when we were dating, all through those steps, it was not an option. Like, I told him, we are fostering. And in all honesty, 100% transparency, he was not a fan. He was very nervous about attachment and the children possibly having to leave us. He was very worried about, you know, what may come in the home and all those different factors that I would say many people who may consider fostering worry about. So anyway, I remember we had only been married not long at all. I can't even remember how long it was, maybe a few months. It wasn't long at all.
Wow.
And I had brought up foster care several times.
So you were just going for it.
Yes. I was not gonna give up. And the answer was always no. And so I thought, well, I have to find a way to fulfill this hole in my heart and this passion of what I know I want to do. So I began volunteering at a nonprofit called All God's Children in Nicholasville, Kentucky. Actually used to work there as well. But started volunteering there and taking the teen mothers. It's a group home for pregnant and parenting teens. I began taking the mothers who wanted to attend church to Southland on Richmond Road in Lexington. And just by myself, I would go and pick him up, and we would attend church together on Sundays. And eventually, my husband started meeting us at church. So we started meeting these girls that were in the foster care system. They were in a group home setting, but they were in the foster care system. And he was meeting them, and he was meeting their children. And one random day, we were sitting at his place, and I guess we would have been dating at the time. And he came to me and he said, let's do it. What do you mean, let's do it? Let's go for it. So we signed up to get certified to become foster parents.
So I love that, because he had the same questions that probably most people do. I mean, we did foster care too for a while. And that was, I had always, for me, it was always adoption. I was always ready and willing to adopt into our home. And as my wife and I got to the point where our two children were at that time, I think 8 and 10 or something like that, we really seriously started having those conversations, and she immediately turned it around to foster care, thinking, well, why would we adopt from around the world or whatever when there's kids literally in our backyard? So we started those conversations, and that was the thing for me. Like, I'm a huge softie. I don't know if I, like, I'm going to love a kid who comes into my home, and just, I couldn't wrap my head around that idea of breaking my own heart or having a kid to leave that I've become attached to. And so all those same fears were there for me, which maybe we can unpack that a little bit, how you guys processed through that. But what I love that you did was you kind of honored him in that, hey, I'm not going to push this forward without you, obviously, but you still pursued that kind of obedience and that burden that you had by serving with that nonprofit. So you still found a step to take to do that eventually God used to kind of bring him around. So how did you go through, like, did he have any more conversations with you about that in terms of some of those fears, or was it basically like that one conversation was, hey, I've forget it, we're just going to go ahead and do it?
I think truly just being in the church setting and being with the teens and their children, and just just really seeing these are just kids who need to be given a chance. They're just kids. And he finally was ready to just go for it. But like you said, I mean, I think his biggest fear was the attachment. He's a big softy as well. Has a heart of gold. And we have had several foster children that have come and gone.
Okay.
And every time we're both wiping each other's tears at the doorstep.
Yeah.
So it's definitely not easy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we proceeded with the foster care. And I will tell you where we're at now and where we were a couple weeks into it.
Yeah.
He loves it just as much as I do. And I would say it's his passion as much as it is mine now.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, for somebody who's listening to this and maybe has had those same questions and had those same thoughts about, hey, I wonder about foster care. I wonder if I could do it, but those same reservations, talk us through what that's like. And obviously you can't share specifics, I'm sure, but can you share just a little bit more about what it's like bringing somebody into the home, and sometimes you have them for days or weeks, and sometimes it's months or even longer than that, and then they go back to a home, and you as the caregiver for that, however long it is, you're then releasing, and obviously it's like you said, it's emotional. You're wiping each other's tears. How do you process through that and continue to do that? Obviously, you've done it more than once now.
Right.
What's that like for you, and maybe you and Will as you process that together?
Yeah, I think it takes a certain mindset. It takes that higher power, which for us is the faith.
Yeah.
And just knowing, you know, I always say, and I've always said, everything happens for a reason. Mm-hmm. God has a plan for my life. God has a plan for these children's life. And I really just hang on to that through the process of fostering. And that's what gets me through the hard times. But I can tell you, every situation is different. I will tell you, a positive story of one positive, just one positive story of many with foster care is we had a sibling group come in and it was a teen boy. And I think the little girl was 9 or 10, maybe 10. But they came in and had nothing, nothing but the clothes on their back. Obviously the background was bad enough that they were in foster care.
Right.
So we come in and they have nothing, so we have to take them out, right? We have to get them all the clothing that they need. Actually needed one more bed because we had an additional foster child in our home as well, so I didn't have enough beds.
Yeah.
So we went and we bought another bed. And we thought that these children would be with us for at least at a minimum, 3 or 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget, they were amazing kids. It was exactly 1 week later, and I was at a dentist appointment. And my phone rang, and I answered. It was the social worker.
Yeah.
And she said, Ashley, the judge has ordered return to parent.
Okay.
The judge has gone against what we have recommended. They were surprised by the situation, but you have to return them right now. So I'm in the dentist's chair bawling. And I've had these kids just a week, you know? And it was just so hard. You get attached so easily.
Mm-hmm.
But a positive of that story. So my husband was on shift. He's a firefighter. So he was on shift that day. So I was by myself. And the kids came home from school, and I told them, hey, you're being returned to your biological family today. And we're going to meet biological mom at this time. We met her at Chick-fil-A here in Georgetown. And so I pack up everything, you know, that we had got for him. And I met her there and tried to hold it together, tried to be strong, and just lost it. Just bawled and told her how much I loved her kids and that I would always be here for her.
Yeah.
And that story has turned into we are a support system for her. And it's really equal. I mean, she'll reach out to me. I'll reach out to her to check on the kids.
Yeah.
And that is actually why we initially signed up for fostering. We wanted to be a support system also for those parents who maybe just need a little extra help.
Yeah, that's incredible. And you know, that was the same conversation my wife and I had when we went into foster care and decided, hey, we're going to do this. And recognizing that the whole goal of foster care, the way the system is designed, is you're just fostering that. You're taking care of the kids so that the parent ideally can take care of themselves and that you can play a role, a really crucial role in something really, hopefully, redemptive.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of, that's what we viewed it as, that we were being a part of this redemptive process where hopefully a parent or two parents could get their stuff together, get their life a little bit in order, establish some better habits and patterns, and then we could return the kids to a loving environment. So that was, it's really idealistic, and it doesn't always, mm-hmm. doesn't always work out that way for sure. So what do you, from your perspective, and so one of the things when we started going through our training classes, there was, I don't know, like 20 or 30 couples in the class that we went to. And when we went around the room and had to introduce ourselves, we were one of, I think, only two couples in the whole room out of the 20 or so couples who said we want to do foster care to foster care. Everybody else said we want to foster to adopt.
Mm-hmm.
What's your perspective on that, if any? But like, so I feel like it comes with challenges if you're fostering and your goal is adoption, because it's always going to change the way that you're viewing those relationships. Have you ever encountered that for yourself or seen that in people that you're connected to?
Yes. The answer is yes. I would say fostering to adopt is, there's many challenges with it,
yeah,
because nothing is certain.
Right.
And reunification is often the number one goal.
Yeah.
So I would say, you know, we signed up initially to just foster.
Yeah.
Now, when you have kids enter your home, that often changes
too. Real fast.
We'll
really
take them.
Fast.
Yeah, yeah, we'll take them forever. So we've been, I guess, in both situations. People ask, "Are you an adoptive home?" Well, yes and no. I mean, we signed up to foster, but if the situation, you know, felt right, then we absolutely would.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I would say there is a lot of challenges, and you have to know that going into it, that just nothing is certain. And as unfortunate as this sounds, we are just the foster parents.
Yeah.
You know, we're there, like you said, just to be the support, to show some normalcy. And my thinking has always been, if I can change just one life, even if they're going to leave here and go back to family or whoever, then I've done my work, and I've done, you know, what I want to do.
Yeah.
So I think it's just your outlook.
Yeah.
You really have to have a certain outlook and a certain mindset to be able to cope with the hardships of it.
Yeah. Our situation, like I said, we entered foster care to foster, and the way our situation worked out was the very first placement we had was a newborn.
Oh.
So we took a 7-day old, I guess he was about 10 days by the time we left the hospital, and ended up being able to adopt him. But we went through that. There was a parent involved trying to get custody and trying to work a plan, and was not able to over the time. But we walked that tension of, man, you try holding a newborn in the hospital and not falling in love right away. And,
right.
And so discovering what my prayer life was really hard. And there were moments along the way for us. In fact, there was one day in particular where we got some miscommunication, and we thought that there was going to be a return to parent situation immediately. Mm-hmm. And I just had this about 24 hours of, you know, just grief. Like, I'd had this baby in my house for 9 months. And,
yes.
But as I was grieving and just praying and processing through that, ultimately came to the realization that I wouldn't have changed it. Like, even if I did have to go return this baby to his dad, I wouldn't have not done that 9 months. I wouldn't have not cared for him. And who knows that the things that I was able to pray over him for those 9 months, and the things I was able to provide my wife and I, what kind of impact God's going to do with that. And there's some really, really hard things to process through when you're taking care of somebody or falling in love with a child. But
absolutely.
Yeah.
Anytime we've had a foster child leave us, my husband is saying, never again, never again. And then you get that phone call, and it's all over again. Well, we have to say yes.
Yeah.
We've got it. It's a child. You know, they just need this chance. So.
Yeah. So you started doing that pretty early on, almost as soon as you were married, it sounds like. Well, you started volunteering, you said. But
yeah. So my story began with babysitting at the age of 13.
Yeah.
And then to go through everything, we'd be here forever. But
yeah.
A quick version of it is babysitting all those years and knowing. I used to say, I want to be a child abuse investigator.
Huh.
That's what I want to be. Well, there's really no such job
right.
as a child abuse investigator. It's more of a social worker.
Right.
And so I did go to college and got a criminal justice degree.
Okay.
And I do investigate for a living.
Yeah.
I do nothing with child abuse. But I was always looking for that hole in my heart to fill. That's my passion. That's what I want to be doing. So I was working at the Drug Enforcement Administration in Lexington. That was my job right out of college and really enjoyed it. Some really fun, cool work. But I still just had that void that I need to fill this in a way that, you know, where my passion is at. So I started looking for just a part-time job where I could fulfill that purpose and found All God's Children.
Yep.
So I worked there as a youth care worker for a while, basically worked with pregnant and parenting teens, was there for a year. I'm fast forwarding through this as quick as I can, but was there for a year, and they had asked me to move into a director's role over the residential services.
Okay.
So that was over 12 staff and then the 13 residents that lived in the home. So I couldn't leave financially. I could not leave the DEA, my career, to work at the nonprofit, but I really wanted to do it.
Yeah.
So I put I'll never forget, a Carl, Carl Smith and Pam Smith are the founders and the owners of All God's Children. And I put this PowerPoint together saying, I can do this in part-time hours. I can work all day at DEA, and then I can come here and I can fulfill this role.
Yeah.
I remember Carl saying, we've never done that with a director's position. But he gave me the opportunity. And I did that for, I guess it was about 5 years.
Oh, wow.
And so that was filling I never felt like work.
Yeah.
I would leave DEA at 5 o'clock. I would go straight to All God's Children. I might be there until 10, 11, midnight. But it never felt like work because I was doing what my heart was called to do, I feel like. Along all that time, I ended up changing positions. I wanted to be more in the field investigating. So I applied for the state and ended up getting hired on with the Office of Inspector General. So began working in Frankfort.
Yeah.
So I was living in Lexington, driving to Frankfort to investigate, which I investigate the whole state. So wherever the cases are, I travel to. When I was done with my workday, then I would go to All God's Children in Nicholasville.
Yeah.
So I'm all over,
you're
the
all
place.
Over the place.
You know, it's like an hour between Nicholasville and Frankfort. So it just became too much.
Right.
And I remember writing my resignation letter and then deleting it and then writing it and then deleting it, thinking, I can't leave this passion. So I finally had to and met my husband during all this time. And that is kind of when I felt that hole again of I'm not fulfilling the purpose that I want to be doing or that I feel that I'm called to do. So that is when I began bringing up the foster care to my husband. And yes, you asked, we did begin very early. We had no biological kids and we were freshly married.
Yeah.
People thought we were crazy.
Yeah.
But we did it, and I would say it's one of the best decisions that we've made.
So how long have you been doing foster care, and how many kids have you had in and out of your home?
I guess it's been a little over 3 years.
Okay.
Or maybe right at 3 years, and 9 or 10 children, and that is either that's a combination of official placements or respite care.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. We met somebody in some of our training or the ongoing classes that you take while you're doing it, and she's been doing it forever and has had over 100 kids, you know, and like just over however many years, and you know, still is doing it and just a resource. And it's a challenging thing, and it's really neat to hear how you and your husband came to that place of both wanting to do it. I would never recommend anyone getting into foster care unless your spouse is on board with it, because it is really can be really, really difficult, but obviously really rewarding as well. How do I guess your younger two are pretty young, and so they may not really grasp. Obviously your youngest is just a few months old, but has that ever been like, okay, we have to stop at some point when these two kids get a little bit older? Is it something that you feel like you'll always continue to have in your home, at least for the foreseeable future?
I think we will always continue to do it. And again, it's the mindset and the belief that we're doing it for all the right reasons. We're doing it. We're doing it. People may say or may ask, well, what are you taking away from your little two?
Yeah.
And I would argue, what are we taking away? What are we giving them? What are we showing them? And so I think my hope is that, you know, Maisie's only two and Maya's 5 months, but as they continue to see these children that come in their homes and that are brothers and sisters, that they learn what God's love is like, and that we should love everyone, and you don't judge a book by its cover, right? We just love people. I feel like that's what we're here to do, is to serve and to love one another. So
that's an incredible, that'll preach right there. not what are you taking away, but what are you giving them? So talk to us a little bit about Hopeful Home, the boutique that you run, and kind of where you got started with that. And was that something that you started because you wanted to try and raise funds, or it was just sort of a passion thing that you did on the side and thought, hey, I can do something else with that? How'd that get started?
That got started because we were at one of our trainings. You have to do so many continuing education, which you're probably familiar with. So we were at one of our trainings, and I didn't remember in our initial training hearing how many children you could take in your home. Mm-hmm. But in this specific training, they were telling us how many children you were allowed to accept, and which was it was four per bedroom. So however many bedrooms you could have, or however many bedrooms you could have four children per bedroom, but they had to be the same sex. Mm-hmm. So all males in one room, all females in another room. And I was sitting there, and I looked at my husband, half jokingly, but really not.
Yeah.
I said, okay, we've got three bedrooms, so that's four kids per bedroom, so we can take 12 kids. And he looked at me and said, absolutely not. So really, Hopeful Home kind of began right there, because obviously with our lifestyles, you know, we both work full time, own the boutique now, have four children. You can only do so much, right? And I feel like there's so many kids still out there that I can't physically reach. Mm. So I honestly just started brainstorming, okay, what else can I do? What else can I do to, again, fulfill this purpose that I feel so strongly about, I feel so called to? And so I was laying in bed one night and just thought, it just came over me. And I just thought of what if I could open a boutique that would be specific to foster care? So then the wheels just started spinning. And that's really how Hopeful Home was created. I moved on it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
We opened in January of 2019. So we've just right at a year.
Yeah.
And just in our first year, we have donated to 8 nonprofits, over $3,000, whether that be financial, like a check, or brand new trendy women's clothing. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I love that there's always something more, and it's not shocking that someone who could work full time and then also put so many hours in for a nonprofit also can take that energy and put it towards continuing just to raise awareness and raise funds. So how does that work? Do you all, like, I have no concept, frame of mind, for what it takes to run a boutique. Do you have to, you're coming up with fashion, or like what's involved in you owning a boutique?
So I have a whole new respect for business owners.
You're talking out of my league here when it comes to fashion and boutiques.
It is so much work.
Yeah.
But again, kind of like going back to All God's Children, it's not work when you love it, right?
Yeah.
So it is so much work. I'm so thankful for my mother-in-law, because we have four children and our house is full. So I have a lot of inventory. I would say a full boutique. If you were to go into a brick and mortar boutique, that's as much clothing and accessories that I have as well, and don't have a place to store it all. Hmm. So it is stored at my in-law's house, and my mother-in-law does all of my shipping for me.
Okay.
She does all of my tagging. She does the steaming of the clothes. We have photo shoots once a month, and then I upload all that to the website. But it consists of a lot of pop-up shops.
Yeah.
So we look for like different vendor events. We're actually doing one this weekend. It's a little bit unique to what we normally do, but we are going to be at the vendor event for Battalion Chief Johnny Jacobs at Royal Springs here in Georgetown. We're going to be set up at that event, and we're actually going to be donating to Johnny's family, which is a little bit different, but as you probably know. I have a heart, or a place in my heart for firefighters as well.
Yeah,
so.
certainly kids who lost a dad in the line of duty, for sure. Yeah,
absolutely. So we're going to be set up there this weekend. But normally we look for events that are maybe like April is Child Abuse Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. So we'll look for events with different CASAs around the state and go and sell our things. And then we donate a portion of whatever we receive of profits back to nonprofits. And we've done some partnerships, but usually we just randomly select those nonprofits. Most of the donations have been here in Central Kentucky, but we also have donated to Texas and California.
Okay, wow.
So
that's incredible. I didn't even think about like the pop-up kind of boutique shop. So that's a whole nother layer of what y'all do. So that's awesome. You have help with that other than your mother-in-law?
Yes and no.
Yes and no.
My husband.
Yeah.
My husband and we'll most likely have to hire some additional help here soon, just because of our crazy lives.
Yeah.
But right now it's myself, my husband's support, and just help a lot of the time setting things up, and my mother-in-law.
Yeah. So if we'll make sure to link to that, the boutique website's hopefulhome.org or
mm-hmm.
dot com?
Yep, dot org.
.org, yeah.
Yes.
So hopefulhome.org, and we'll link that on our show notes. And so all the women listening, you can go check out the boutique and find out some of the latest things available on there. So just as we're kind of wrapping up here, there's people listening who have thought about foster care, who have thought about adoption, who are maybe thinking about it right now. Is there anything that you would just want to kind of leave as a word of encouragement or as maybe a first step to take for people as they're trying to discern if that's something that they need to be obedient to? Because usually if that thought starts to plant in the back of your head, it's worth listening to and chasing after a little bit. So any kind of final words you'd leave anybody who's maybe in that realm of considering something like that?
Right. I would say pursue it, even if it's just finding out more about how to get started. And feel free, if you want to reach me through Hopeful Home, I can talk about fostering all day.
Yeah.
So clearly it's my passion.
Yeah.
So feel free. And I'm not an expert, but I can try to answer your questions or direct you to someone who may know them. But I would say just pursue it and get your questions answered. I always encourage people who are very interested but very hesitant. A lot of people hesitant for that fear of attachment and then losing that child if their end goal is adoption. I have said, try respite.
Yeah.
Just try respite because it gives you just a glimpse of what it's like.
Yeah.
And then maybe that'll give you your answers.
Well, and we encourage people to that too while we were doing foster care, because respite care is needed.
Yes.
It's basically giving somebody who is a foster parent who needs just a weekend sometimes, or sometimes even just a day for that child or children to go to a safe, approved home. It's more oftentimes for the parents, just that little break. And so you can commit and serve and be a part of the foster care system, be a part of that story without necessarily the full-fledged commitment of bringing kids long-term into your home. So that's a great idea.
Now, a lot of the foster children that we have had, and we don't use respite often, we have to use it this weekend because we're going back home for a funeral, but my children will ask, can we go back to Amy's house? Can we go back to Jennifer's house?
Yeah.
So those respite parents become foster parents and become those positive influences that these children need.
Yeah, that's incredible. Well, I'm really encouraged by what you're doing. I love that you just kind of knew you had that calling and that stirring from an early age and pursued that. And obviously it's an awesome thing that your husband got on board and that you've been able to change so many lives already and probably so much more going forward. So we'll make sure to link to your website and some social profiles so people can reach out to you. But Ashley, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Well, I want to say thanks again to Ashley for joining us here today on the Ordinary Faith Podcast. As I mentioned, I will link to the Hopeful Home and her boutique online, where you'll also be able to find out more about Ashley and her story. And I'll also link to some of her social profiles so you can connect to her and reach out. As she said, she loves talking about foster care. So if you have questions or you want to respond or just thank her for this conversation, you can find her online and reach out there. As always, I want to say thanks to the band Legacies for being the soundtrack to this podcast. You can find Legacies music on Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your music. Until next time, friends, remember, all it takes to bring heaven to earth is ordinary faith and extraordinary grace.